After going bankrupt running a cotton plantation, Eli Lilly returns to Indiana to create a pharmaceutical empire. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, the Lilly legacy of charitable contributions lives on with the newly branded Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana. It's all about giving, growing, and granting for the greater good, and preparing for the unexpected challenges like COVID. My guests are Jill Carpenter, Foundation CEO, and Chief Financial Officer Tim Jones. The Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana manages funds in 9 counties to make a lasting impact on the quality of life. 2 Main Street is next, presented by the Berger Wren Group at Bayard Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. For the past 35 years, more than $80 million in charitable gifts have been given to organizations and individuals in the Evansville area. It's local giving with a lasting impact and described as a best-kept secret in town. Well, the secret is coming out, and we're going to learn all about the newly branded Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana, now serving 9 counties. Let's list them: Vandenberg, Warwick, Posey, Gibson, Davies, Knox, Perry, Pike, and Spencer. But first, let's go all the way back to someone who began this legacy of philanthropy in the 19th century, a familiar name, Eli Lilly. Lilly was a druggist when he enlisted in the Union Army, climbed in rank after taking part in several campaigns. He was captured by the Confederates, released in a prisoner exchange, and at the end of the Civil War was elevated to the rank of lieutenant colonel. In the post-war years, Eli Lilly went bankrupt after a failed cotton plantation venture in Mississippi, and that's where his pregnant wife contracted malaria and died. Eli Lilly returned to Indiana, opened a laboratory in Indianapolis, and one of the first medicines he produced was quinine, a drug to treat malaria. Well, the rest is history. The business prospered, and in 1937, Lilly's son and grandsons established the Lilly Endowment, which has become one of the largest philanthropic endowments in the world. The Evansville-based Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana traces its history to the Lilly legacy of giving when in 1991, the Lilly Endowment launched GIFT, Giving Indiana Funds for Tomorrow. And the Community Foundation Alliance, now known as the Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana, was created. With that preamble, it's time to introduce my guests, the Chief Executive Officer of the Community Foundation, Jill Carpenter, and the Chief Financial Officer, Tim Jones. So guys, welcome to 2 Main Street. Good to have you here.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Okay, 35 years and counting. Did the Community Foundation start out with seed money from Lilly?
We did. We actually had a group, the Junior League of Evansville, who in the late 80s started doing some investigating on what they needed to do to bring a community foundation to our region. And then Lilly Endowment created the GIFT program that you mentioned and said to really the entire state, any county, if you would like to create a community foundation, we will help seed that with some of our funds. So in 1991, Vandenberg County and Posey County created the Community Foundation of Greater Evansville. Throughout the years, Lilly gave additional GIFT initiatives. So that was GIFT 1. We're currently in GIFT 9, so there's been 9 iterations of the GIFT program. But with 2, 3, 4, and 5, we added more counties. Mm-hmm. So we changed from just the Greater Evansville Community Foundation to the Community Foundation Alliance, and we added counties up until 1998. We added our last 2 counties, which was Warwick and Pike County. Okay. So we are now serving 9 counties in Southwest Indiana.
I'm curious, what were some of those early grants?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure exactly what they were, but I know they were small. Mm-hmm. As a growing community foundation, you know, what we do is really focus on getting donors to support the efforts And then we endow those dollars, which we'll talk about a little later about what that looks like. But they were small grants to small community or small nonprofits here in our region. So
mm-hmm. Now, Tim, how many charitable funds in those first years? And today, how many funds does the foundation handle?
Yeah, David, we have we started with just one fund, honestly. And, you know, and it's built from there. And it's tied to the donors in the community that really see the impact the community foundation can make. So at this point, we have over 1,200 funds that we manage. So each one of those has a unique perspective and benefit to the grantees. And what we really are concentrating on at this point in time is our Rooted in Community Match campaign. And that's for the greatest needs of the community. And those are grants that we're going to be able to address the ever-changing needs of the community.
Give me an example of some of these funds. It has to be a wide variety.
Yes, we do have a wide variety of funds. We have several different types of funds. One is going to be a designated fund. So if you have a donor that really loves WNIN and they want to support that organization going forward for eternity, they set up an endowment with us, and we send a distribution to that nonprofit every year. And then one of the main things is our unrestricted, our community good dollars that we have. And that's where we're really trying to address the community needs in each one of those areas that we serve.
Any really unusual fund that you can talk about?
We have a lot of funds, especially in the rural communities, that take care of cemeteries.
Oh, really?
So we have, you know, a lot of cemeteries, if were run by churches mm-hmm. or by municipalities, or they might just be abandoned cemeteries. And, you know, we want to upkeep those. So we have there are a lot of rules and regulations around cemetery funds. So have to be careful about that. But we have people who set up because they have family that live there or not live there. Well, I guess they do live there. that live there through eternity,
the
I guess.
Right? That's right.
Yeah. So we have some of those types of funds. A lot of designated funds, like Tim mentioned. We also have what we call field of interest funds. So maybe somebody doesn't necessarily have a favorite charity, but they have a favorite cause.
Okay.
So they might say, we want to feed the hungry, and basically any food insecurity grant application we get, we can grant out of that fund.
Of course, there are many local organizations doing good every day. We have Goodwill, the Salvation Army, the Food Bank, the Rescue Mission, and the list goes on and on. A foundation is a type of nonprofit organization, but there's a difference in the fundraising. Nonprofits rely on ongoing fundraising, government grants, public donations, but foundations do operate somewhat differently. So what's the difference?
So one difference is that we're not boots on the ground providing those services to the clients. So Goodwill, Salvation Army, you know, they're actually the ones that are working with the clients and providing that service. What we do, again, we bring in dollars, and it's the give, grow, grant. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Mm-hmm. But donors will give to us, and we invest those dollars. And then as those dollars grow, we make a distribution off of those annually. So those are sustained, and they don't go away. I mean, those are forever. A regular nonprofit that is a direct service, they have to raise their operating dollars every single year. They have to start over. And, you know, the endowment, if they were to create an endowment, that would help create some sustainable revenue for them. So
they have a budget they have to meet.
Right. Right. Right.
Okay. So what is a charitable fund, Tim?
Well, charitable fund, David, is going to be anything that's going to benefit the community. So, you know, we have, like we talked about, we have several different types of funds that we can fit into that. But essentially it's, do you live, you work, you play in your community? Do you want to see it better? And there's nonprofits that are making it better. So how can you create that legacy to benefit those nonprofits that continue to address social issues in our communities?
Now, there are payout requirements to spend money in those funds. So who decides when, how, and where to spend the payout requirement?
Yeah, David, we have an investment committee that monitors our investments. And we have an investment policy statement that dictates our spend rate. So what we do every year is we look at the health of the fund and we look at the past 12 quarters of value. And we do a 4.5% spending policy off of the 12-quarter rolling average. So every year we do that 4.5%. If the board approves it, we can go anywhere between 1.5 and 4.5. 4.5 is our max, and we always strive to do that max distribution off of our funds because that's going to make the greatest impact in the community.
Well, tell me about the board of directors, Jill.
So we have a governing board that is made up of community leaders from all 9 counties. So we have representation from all 9 of our counties on that board. So there's 2 representatives from each of the 9 counties, and then we have our officers. So they have a vested interest in our health and our organization because the work that we are doing impacts their community back home where they live and work. So in each of our communities that we serve, we also have a lot of volunteers. So we have advisory boards in each of those communities that help raise dollars, which we cannot do any of this work without donors. So that's number one. They help identify and bring those dollars in the form of those funds. They also recommend their grant making and determine what the most pressing needs are in their community. They're the ones that live in that community. So we want to make sure that those dollars are being spent in a way that the donor would be happy about. Donors entrust us to, with the funds that they've given us, they entrust us to take care of those dollars, to steward those dollars, and make sure that they are being spent in the best possible way possible in that community.
Well, who makes the final decision on this?
The board of directors makes all final decisions with approval on those grants, but they are recommended by local folks in the community that are there and know what the needs
okay,
are.
Okay, the pressing needs. What are some of the pressing needs right now, Tim?
Well, really, we're addressing several different areas, but really it's about the health of the community, whether it's mental or substance abuse health. You know, that's a big thing. Wellness, you know, trails, opportunity for recreational sports, things of that nature that really attract people to live here. And that's honestly what we're trying to do in the end is improve our community so much that people want to move here. Mm-hmm. They want to live here. And we have the amenities and the social services in place to provide the population what they need.
Okay, the themes of give, grow, and grant. You want to tackle that, Jill?
Yeah. Okay. So, as I said, we can't do this work without our donors. Mm. So donors in our community need to give. And they entrust us with those dollars that they give. They establish funds. We can name those funds however the donor wants to name them. So we have a lot of family funds in the 1,200 funds that we manage. And then we grow those funds. So our goal when we invest those funds is to get enough in return that we can pay out the grants mm-hmm. that Tim talked about, and that we also keep up with inflation. So we have to grow them so that we have the same purchasing power now as we will 100 years from now, because these are forever, right? So we invest those dollars, and then on an annual basis, we grant those dollars back. So mm-hmm. they give, we grow those dollars, and then we grant that revenue from those funds.
Of course, we talk about the importance of the donors. Any donor stories to share? Who are some of the people that you'd maybe not names, but.
Yeah, I can tell you one that is really tied into the legacy, the family legacy, is that we had an interested donor. They left us a deferred gift. So upon their death, we received a certain portion of their trust. However, it set up a fund to where their family was going to be involved in the decision making of those dollars. And it's going to benefit one area of our communities significantly. And to me, that's one story where that donor had the foresight to set something up 30 years ago to benefit the Community Foundation, mm-hmm. knowing that even though they may not be around, that the needs are going to change. And so how can they tie into the community? And so just that in itself, those types of relationships that we have with donors that are even leaving us an estate or bequest, that they entrust us and the processes we have to be able to fiduciarily responsible, managing that money, and then obviously addressing the needs of the community.
Part of that Lily story, a legacy of giving, mm-hmm. definitely. Right. My guests are Jill Carpenter, she's the CEO of the Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana, and Tim Jones, the Chief Financial Officer. Now, still to come, we're going to learn more about my guests, how did they get involved, and how you can get involved to make a lasting impact, and 35 years and counting, any future plans for the Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. We're talking about the power of local giving and its lasting impact. The newly branded Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana serves Vandenberg, Warwick, Posey, Gibson, Spencer, Pike, Davies, Knox, and Perry counties. My guests are Jill Carpenter, the foundation CEO, and the Chief Financial Officer, Tim Jones. So how is the foundation building stronger communities in the Evansville area? And you talked about that. And an important point to make, I think, too, these funds are providing resources for challenges we can't imagine right now. Was COVID one of those challenges?
Yes, it was.
Most definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So there are a group of funders that, you know, we're not the only funder, but we worked with other funders to create the GERF, Greater Evansville
Response Fund
for COVID. And we raised, and we gave, and also raised from our community $6 million to help nonprofits that were affected by COVID. You know, a lot of nonprofits, you know, were not able to provide some services. Their events where they raise money were canceled. So, and the clients, obviously they had to continue serving their clients. So, for 18 months, we granted those dollars out, through recovery efforts and, really saw what collaboration in our community looks like among the funders. When you work together, we can, achieve more. And so much so that as our board went through some strategic planning, we have a new mission, we have a new vision and values. And one of those things that they really came back to is we want to be collaborative. We want to work with other folks. You know, the donors are collaborative. They're the ones that we pool those dollars to have impact. And, you know, the vision that we have is that we will have a thriving Southwest Indiana for all for generations to come. We're going to be here forever. And we want to make sure that the community that we live and we work in is a thriving community, not just for us, but for everyone.
So COVID, of course, was one of those unforeseen challenges. And who knows what's in the future, right, Tim?
Yeah, you never know. Okay. You never know. But yeah, David, to Jill's point, I just want to point out that, you know, with the concept of building stronger communities is that that's the community dollars that we're trying to raise. You know, those are the ones that are going to build those strong communities. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that we've granted out over $80 million since inception. And I will just say over the last 4 years, we've granted out over $32 million of that 80. So that's the concept of building stronger communities is as we are able to address more of those needs. Just this last year, we granted out over $4 million in community good dollars. Just 10 years ago, it was only $700,000 a year that we were doing. So that's growth and addressing needs. But even if we did grant $4 million, there's still a huge gap in the needs of the community. Mm-hmm. We have opportunities to fund projects, and we can't because there's that gap in addressing those needs.
Now let's learn more about my guests. Jill, let's start with you. How did you get involved with the Community Foundation?
So I've been in the Evansville area since 1990. So that kind of ages me. Most of that time, I have worked in the nonprofit sector. I've been with the Community Foundation for 15 years, and previously I was with the St. Mary's Foundation. So I've been in foundation work for 25 years now, and it was just a good opportunity for me. There had only been one executive director or CEO of the Community Foundation, so I'm the only second one. The first executive director was Marilyn Klink, and she'd been there for 20 years. So, you know, what I like about working in the nonprofit sector is I have the privilege of working with people of generosity every single day. I see the generous spirit of this community. I see the best of people. You know, they want to do good in the community. And that's what attracts me to wanting to stay in the nonprofit sector. Nobody has to give to us. They want to make our community better. And their generosity is what allows us to do our work.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up just west of Indianapolis in a little town called Plainfield. It's bigger now than it was. There wasn't much there. There was a McDonald's and I think a couple gas stations. And I think it's kind of moved into the Evansville, or not Evansville, Indianapolis now. It's all kind of running together. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I grew up there. I went to Purdue University. And then after graduating from Purdue in 1990, I moved down here and raised my children. I have two children who I raised them in Warrick County. I now live in Vandenberg County. My husband has a son who is also grew up here in the Evansville area. So we've been here for a long time.
A lot of roots.
A lot there of roots, go. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Tim, your chance to talk. What's your background, Tim?
Yeah, well, how much time we got, David?
Go for it.
I've got a unique background. But no, I've been in nonprofit for 20-plus years. I'm a CPA, David. And I've worked in corporate and public practice before. And I got involved with the Community Foundation. I was working at USI out there. And the Community Foundation was, at that point, back in the day before everything went electronic, I would come in and do the bank reconciliations for the Community Foundation as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing the work they were doing in the community. So transitioned from USI to, you know, some tax practice. And then once the opportunity came up to work with the Community Foundation, I jumped at the chance because it really just ties in with my life's philosophy, morals, and ethics of being good and doing good. And it's really helped me and my family too, as we've grown, to be able to be more of a family core than me being separated and traveling and doing all types of crazy work.
So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in, I was born in a small town, Springville, Indiana, which is just outside of Bedford, Indiana. So
Stonecutter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I grew up around the quarry hills. We were always fishing and swimming in those quarry hills growing up. So yeah, I grew up around there, came to Evansville to go to USI. And during that time, and you talk about deep roots, during that time, I met my wife, and she is born and raised West Side Evansville. And you know, those roots run really deep.
Oh yeah.
So so we moved away for a few years, and then once we started having children, we moved back to the area. And that's been over 20 years ago. So.
Okay, Jill, let's go back to you. In the article in Evansville Business Magazine, a recent article, you said that the foundation has been kind of a secret, not much in the public spotlight. Do you want that to change?
Yeah. So I think that we've always kind of tried to focus on the work of the nonprofits. And we wanted to make sure that we really highlighted in our giving the donors, which of course we want to do. But in doing so, we've been a little bit almost too humble. I don't know if that's possible, but in our work, you know, it's I think for those of us who grew up in the church, it's, you know, you don't boast, you don't try to take credit for everything. And I think maybe that has done us a little bit of a disservice, because by not telling people and getting out and telling people what we're doing and how we are helping the community through our grant making, people just don't know who we are. You know, I would tell people, well, I work for the Community Foundation Alliance, which, again, we changed the name because nobody knew what the alliance was, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't really speak to who we were, who we served.
Our new name, aligned to?
Right, yes. So the new name does, but they would always say, oh, I've never heard of that. What do you do? And mm-hmm. so I would have to, you know, go through what we would do. So we're trying to get to the point where people, when they hear Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana, they know what we do. We don't have to explain that. Mm-hmm. So that's our hope. We think that the more we tell people about the good works, the more people are going to want to be involved. And like Tim mentioned, the needs in the community exceed our resources. We are never going to be able to take care of every single need in the community. As much as we want to, there's always going to be that need. And so there will always be a need for more donors and more dollars coming in. So we're going to have to be a little bit more
aggressive
in our telling people what we're doing. That's right.
There's always a pressing need somewhere, isn't there, Tim?
There is.
Now, Tim is a chief financial officer. I know any kind of foundation has a long list of regulations and rules, and you have to sort through all those?
Yes, sir, I do, on a daily basis for the most part. But I really enjoy it. But yeah, that's part of the foundation, is that the donors are entrusting us with their money, right? Yeah. I mean, it's charitable.
And it's highly regulated.
It's highly regulated. We have national standards certification that we go through, which is really just a list of, like, do you have this policy? Do you have this policy? Do you have this policy? What type of internal controls do you have? Kind of how are your investments managed? So we go through that, and it's a rigorous application process. But yeah, we get audited every year as well. So we have an audit firm come in and do our audit. It's very complex, a lot of moving parts. You know, 1,200 funds. If you really want to think about it, that's like 1,200 individual little businesses, if mm-hmm. you will. And I consolidate that all into the Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana. But yes, we have strict legal requirements that we have to follow, and that is part of our job and part of our fiduciary responsibility.
Okay. So, Jill, what's the first step to make a lasting impact? How do donors get involved?
Well, now is a really great time to get involved because of our Rooted in Community campaign that we have going on. So we are trying to raise money for our community good grant cycle. That's the grants that address the most pressing needs. And right now, if somebody wants to give to that campaign, for every dollar they give, we're going to match it with $2. So essentially tripling the impact. So if somebody gives us $10,000, we're going to add $20,000 to it. And now we have a $30,000 fund that the donor can have their name on it, and then that fund will then make contributions every year forever. All they have to do is reach out to our staff. They can go to our website, which is cfswi.org, and we have development staff that covers each of our 9 communities, and they can reach out to them and learn more about how they can get involved.
Now, who are the donors? Mostly just individuals or families?
Yes. We have businesses, but primarily they are families. And you know, Tim mentioned the donor that created the estate gift. What's unique about us is that we are perfectly positioned for generational involvement. These funds last forever. And so when a family sets a fund up, they can attach advisors and successor advisors to that fund, so that when they've passed, their children can be involved, potentially grandchildren can be involved. So we can keep these families involved, and our relationship with that family doesn't end when that generation passes. So we are uniquely positioned in that way.
Mm-hmm. So what's on the drawing board now for the Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana? What do you envision in the next maybe 5 to 10 years, guys?
Well, I'm going to tell you, David, 10 years, that's a long time. I've worked for the foundation for about 10 years, and we have grown significantly in what we're able to accomplish.
Do you have any goals?
Oh, yeah, we have goals.
Okay,
sure.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Let's narrow this down.
Yeah.
Shoot some of those goals at me.
So we, again, we are always going to be striving to have a thriving Southwest Indiana for all. Our values are inclusion, integrity, collaboration. We want to look for other ways to collaborate. Stewardship, huge. I mean, obviously, we have to steward the gifts that have been entrusted to our care. And then sustainability, we have a long-term mindset for success. And when the board started talking about what makes a thriving community, they set up some priority pillars for us. So as we do our grant making, we're going to do that through the lens of our four priority pillars, which are vibrant and resilient communities. Think about that as support for public spaces, neighborhoods, revitalization. So kind of quality of place initiatives. The next one is foundations for economic development. These are going to be the building blocks that allow individuals and families to thrive. So think affordable housing, accessible and high quality childcare, educational opportunities. These are the things that we need to have in place to keep people out of poverty. You know, a thriving community would be great if we had nobody in poverty, right? Community health and well-being. We want to prioritize mental health, physical health, social health. And then the last one is our regional collaboration and alignment. We really want to focus on how can we collaborate with other funders to maybe have greater impact, but we also want to encourage our nonprofits to also collaborate. How can they work together to have greater impact in our communities?
Investment in the future?
Investment in the future.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So any final pitch here for the Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana? Why should someone get involved?
You know, anybody can be involved. Any gift there's no gift that is too small for us.
You don't have to be a millionaire?
You don't have to be a millionaire.
Okay.
And again, it's a great time to be involved with our Rooted campaign because what gift you do give, it's tripled. So just call us. This is a limited time. This offer will not last.
Oh, it's a commercial.
That's right. Limited time offer.
Call now.
That's right. Call now. You know, these dollars are meant to grow those funds that help us address those most pressing needs. So we want to fill that gap of need to resources, and this is one step closer for us doing that. So anybody can be involved, and I would encourage any of your listeners to reach out to one of our staff, visit our website, mm-hmm. and we'll talk to you about next steps.
You're a numbers guy, Tim.
I am.
So how are things going?
Going well. Going well. I mean, even with the volatility in the markets in the Middle East, our investment returns have been very healthy over the past 10 years. We average about 9.5% to 10% return annually on our investments. So that's part of that growth that Jill mentioned earlier, is that we're trying to beat inflation a little bit. I know it's hard, especially when it was 7% a few years ago, but overall, you know, 2 to 3% inflation. So numbers are good. Our investments are good. We have a very strong investment committee made up of individuals within our communities that have that experience and know-how of how to, you know, what a foundation should be and how it should be distributing its funds.
My guests have been Jill Carpenter and Tim Jones with the newly branded Community Foundation of Southwest Indiana. And thanks for letting us in on the secret, guys. Mm-hmm. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. We've been talking about the legacy of giving and its lasting impact. And the rewards of helping others are being taught to local children in the book, We Are All Philanthropists. Here's my conversation with the authors of the book, Carol Havens and Kara Steinkuhl, who have also developed a school curriculum to foster kindness and compassion. When I think of a philanthropist, Andrew Carnegie, of course, comes to mind, usually a billionaire, multi-billionaire, whose foundation funds museums, hospitals, countless charities. But according to you guys, you don't have to be rich to be a philanthropist. You can maybe be a kid with a piggy bank.
You can. Actually, it's a really interesting story because in the past, philanthropy was built into the social structure of society. And it wasn't until sometime in the 1800s when the industrial capitalists were making enormous amounts of money.
Before income taxes in the United States.
Correct. And they started giving big financial gifts. So then our society started attributing philanthropy with the wealthy. So when we think of a philanthropist in this day and age, we think of our Bill Gates and our Warren Buffetts and our Bezos and our the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and such. But we go back to the very true meaning of philanthropy, of love of humankind, of love of people, and take that term back. I always say our culture hijacked the term philanthropy to mean wealthy giving money. And it is a portion of what philanthropy is.
Sure.
But the true meaning is loving people.
Well, I think there's some social status involved, too, in being a philanthropist and during that era.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, certainly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The philanthropists, we are philanthropists. How did you come up with that title, guys?
It's kind of ironic because our original title was going to be I Am a Philanthropist, but we found out that was already trademarked by another group somewhere here in the United States. So we took on the We Are All Philanthropists. And our goal in doing that was to help people identify that it doesn't matter their socioeconomic status, it doesn't matter their age, their gender, what have you. We all have the ability to be kind, to show empathy and compassion, and do the true meaning of philanthropy, of loving all people. You don't have to be special to do that. And I think through some of our beta testing and some of the programs that we had, we were working with some of the lower income population and these young people who oftentimes are on the receiving end of what we would consider philanthropy or charity or what have you. And to see the smiles and see these children sit upright when they're all of a sudden realizing they're already doing these things, mm-hmm. they themselves. Mm-hmm. And so now they understand that they can wear that badge, that they are also philanthropists, such.
So basically you're targeting children with this book, We Are Philanthropists. And we have a main character in the book named Phil. Tell me about Phil, Kara.
We do. Phil is a giraffe because we've decided, and this was kind of Carol's idea. We all threw out some animals, but when she mentioned the giraffe, it was like, who doesn't love a giraffe? And we could picture certain, aspects of the giraffe, the long neck wrapping around someone. So we're picturing these, these characters in a book and a giraffe just really fit.
Alliteration there, too. Phil the philanthropist.
Phil the philanthropist. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, the writing of the book, you guys co-wrote this book together?
We did, but honestly, we didn't seek out in the beginning to write a book. It's funny, the curriculum adapted and, we know our limits, so we were meeting and talking to a lot of experts in the area, whether that be, youth serving organizations or people who have written books and just really getting their feedback on things. And anyone who had written, and I shouldn't say written books, but anyone in the teaching field and everyone that we talked to was like, you guys need to write a book that goes along with this. You need to write a book. We heard that a half dozen times. Finally, after we did kind of modify the curriculum, get it to where it is today, and going in that route, we thought we do need to write a book. We do need to take these attributes that we are, defining and teaching in our book or in our curriculum and make it a book. Let's put a character behind it. Let's put a visualization. So that was really, really fun to do. We utilized animals. Mm-hmm. And so people who know us will probably recognize some of the names in the books because we took some of our family members and there's a Grandma Carol and there's Miss Kara and things like that. So we had a lot of fun with it. We had a lot of help along the way as well. So the book actually came after the curriculum, I would say.
Now, Phil, of course, Phil's going to go to school. His first day of school, Phil the giraffe. And he's reading the newspaper, his grandparents, right? Mm-hmm.
and a lot of bad news in the newspaper, and it kind of affects Phil, doesn't it? And Phil says, why are things so bad? I want to change the world. And so Phil goes to school on a mission, right?
Yeah. Grandma actually, he thinks, what can I do? I'm just a child. Mm-hmm. And Grandma lets him know that there's lots of things that he could do to help change the world. And so she challenges him throughout the, you know, to go out and see if he can figure out what it is that he can do to change the world. So through the story, he goes about his day with his friends, and he goes to school. Certain actions that he takes, he helps the principal who happened to stumble off of a stool, helps him up. He sits with someone in a class in the cafeteria that was new to the school that was sitting by themselves. His friends go to soccer practice, and one of the kids are teaching other activities that he had learned. They help someone on the way home from school. They buy cookies from a neighbor. And when he finally gets home and the next day he's talking to his grandmother, he says, I still haven't figured out what I can do. And then Grandma walks him back through his day.
Mm-hmm.
And when she walks him back through the day, she identifies that when you help pick up the principal or help pick up his papers, that was an act of kindness. Mm-hmm. And then he talks about when he showed empathy, when he showed compassion, when his friends showed their purpose, and when their friends showed their passion, and how they were able to express gratitude and service and respect. All of those attributes that we've identified in our book happened to Phil just on a normal day basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Phil was able to recruit his friends.
He was.
To join him on this mission,
yes.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And David, this was something that we saw through, especially that first beta test. One of the things that we did during testing was we wanted to collect data. And so we would have like a pre and a post test. One of the questions that really stood out first time through was a simple question: do you think you're a kind person? So we asked kids, these kids were third through sixth graders, so you had kind of a little bit of a range of age, do you feel like you're a kind person? And something that was shocking was 100% of them said no. And that just, you know, it almost like took our breath away, like, really? And so what was funny and what we found from the start to finish was these kids were kind. Some of them weren't mindful of it. They weren't recognizing when they were doing these things that truly could lift another person up and that probably lifted themselves up, you know, as they were doing it. Also, you have instances where it's too cool to be kind, and maybe they don't want to show that.
Mm-hmm.
There was one individual in particular, and I've told this story because it just really touched me. This particular kid was probably around 12. And from the start, he wasn't real engaged. You know, he was slouched in his seat and just wasn't, you know, I could tell. I don't know how much he was into it. He was not very involved. And by about the third class, we would have the students after every lesson do what we called acts of kindness or acts of philanthropy. And then they'd come back and they would talk about it. Well, the teacher had heard, you know, this particular student. And so she asked, who's done, you know, have you done an act of philanthropy? And, you know, he was like, no, I haven't done it. And she goes, no, I heard you did. I heard there was a gentleman whose car broke down and you immediately got out and you helped push the car to the side of the road. And he kind of gets a smirk, his cheeks kind of get red, and, you know, kind of sits up a little bit. And then his friend was like, yeah. And then the other day there was a homeless man on the street and you gave him your chips from lunch. And like from that day on, the kid sat up, he's kind of giggly, he kind of got over that, I think, that too cool to be kind. He's opening up doors for people. We see him at lunch, he's helping clean up. And it's like, it took him out of that shell of, oh, okay, you know, I can show that I'm a kind person. Mm-hmm. I can be mindful of it. Mm-hmm. And so that was really something special. That kid still comes to mind anytime we do this. But by the end, we then ask them again, do you feel you're a kind person? And obviously that went up. It definitely 100% did not say no after that.
Rewards of kindness.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yes.
Now, Phil, you have a Phil mascot, stuffed giraffe. Does Phil make personal appearances?
He does. I recently read to a preschool group at one of the local schools here. And Phil went in, and I think Phil was more of a hit than I was, by all means. Everybody wanted to pet Phil and such, but we take Phil pretty much everywhere we go. And he's just, we have people who will walk up to us and go, so you have a giraffe? What's that for? And so then we're able to share our story as well, what we're doing.
Okay. My guests are Carol Havens and Kara Steinkuhl, co-founders and authors of We Are All Philanthropists. Now, Kara, did you help develop some of these characters?
Oh, yes. We all sat down, we brainstormed, we went through and just kind of wrote down the story. Did we want this to, was this a week in the life of Phil? Was this one day? So, yes. And again, we kind of brought in even some personal aspects of it. You know, I've got some soccer players in my family. So there's a little soccer scene. And so, yeah, we all definitely brainstormed, threw in ideas of characters, even the animals. We chose the animals that we wanted for each character. That was definitely a creative side that I haven't always been able to use, but we had a lot of fun doing that. We all had in mind.
Now, there's an owl, I think, has a broken wing, mm-hmm. and all the kids help him with raking leaves or something,
absolutely.
Cleaning up his yard.
Yeah. Mr. Drew. Mr. Drew is the owl, and if you read the book, you'll notice he actually has touch points throughout almost every scene. Mr. Drew he's the principal, and then he sees the kids in the cafeteria, and then later, because he has a hurt wing, the kids help clean up his yard. So Mr. Drew is definitely a character that you see throughout.
And Mr. Drew is actually named after the spouse of one of our co-writers.
So do what you can with what you have where you are. That quote from Theodore Roosevelt is timeless. And we are learning from my guests we can all be philanthropists. Their motto is kindness changes everything. Carol Havens and Kara Steinkuhl are co-founders and authors of We Are All Philanthropists. And now we've talked about the new children's book, We Are All Philanthropists, featuring Phil the giraffe. This is a children's book with animal characters. Phil is sad over bad news in the world. He can't solve all these problems, but he can make a difference in his hometown, and he starts with his school. First day of school, Phil is the giraffe on a mission to make a difference right now. A lot of themes in the book, kindness, empathy, compassion, passion and purpose, respect, gratitude, and acts of service. And each one is highlighted with a little story, a vignette in the book, right?
Absolutely. Yes, we decided, we kind of honed in on those eight attributes to highlight. Kindness being a simple one, you know, the quality of being friendly, generous, and considerate is how we define that in our curriculum. Obviously, we use examples from the book where, you know, Phil and Yash help Mr. Drew back up after falling off the stool. We can all be kind by doing simple acts. It can be as simple as smiling at someone, complimenting someone, saying, how's your day, you know, to a stranger, things like that. Empathy and compassion came next. And this was one of those that I really like, because I'm going to be honest, even as an adult, I don't know that I really knew the difference. And when we started to kind of look into this, and, you know, empathy is our feeling or awareness towards other people's emotions in an attempt to understand how they feel. So it's the awareness of spotting someone across the room that, wow, they look sad, they look lonely. Compassion is the response, the emotional response to others.
So you act on that.
You act on it. Okay. And so I didn't know if the kids would be able to understand this. They could. They understand. It's like they recognize, then they act. So empathy and compassion, those were definitely two more attributes we wanted to really hone in on. Passion and purpose, we like as well. Passion obviously is an intense enthusiasm for something, but we can also use our passion to find our purpose. So, you know, in the book, for example, Peyton is a soccer player. He has a love or a passion for soccer. And so he took that and he showed great purpose in taking time to teach others soccer skills. We can all do that as well. You know, if we are good at algebra, maybe we tutor people. If we like to dance, maybe there's lots of ways that you can hone in and kind of combine both of those. So passion and purpose is another. Respect, you know, the feeling of appreciation for someone else's achievements or abilities. Very, very simple. We can you know, whether it be, you know, someone military, we have great respect for, you know, something that they've done, their achievements, their abilities. Gratitude, that was a fun one with kids because I don't think all of us kind of recognize all of the things we should be thankful for. I know in one of the tests we did, something as simple as, you know, do you thank your parents for cooking dinner at night? Do you say thank you to your, you know, cafeteria or lunch ladies or the custodian? Like all the little things that we truly just aren't even mindful of today. So gratitude was one. And then obviously service, you know, the action of helping others to a better life through the giving of your time and your talent. Mm-hmm. And so when you go out and you act upon, you help. In the book, they went and they helped clean up Mr. Drew's yard. You know, obviously you can go help clean up a park. You can go volunteer somewhere. There's lots of ways that we can kind of, you know, hone in service.
I think you write somewhere, Carol, that these messages are not just for children. You hope they set examples for adults as well?
Yeah, our goal all along was, how can we teach everyone about philanthropy? We actually thought it might be more difficult to reach the adult population, to get people to truly listen to it. But we thought if we can teach children, that they would take that home and talk about it and mm-hmm. talk to their parents about it. So that's why we started with the children.
Now, simple things to teach a child kindness, saying thank you, that's an easy one. Also, be kind to yourself. Is that important?
Absolutely. We have to be able to sit down and look at what's within. Kindness is intentional and it's relational. And when we do an act of kindness, it's not just the act of kindness, the recipient of that kindness that will benefit. We benefit from that as well.
So kindness can be a movement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it across the country in certain areas. So what would that look like in Evansville if we could see that movement here?
Mm-hmm. And here's an update on the We Are All Philanthropists story. The curriculum now has free formats for after school, homeschool, faith-based, and early childhood classrooms. The program has also been downloaded in several states. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. 2 Main Street on WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11. Previous shows are on demand at WNIN.org.